As promised, we are talking NBA right now. We are joined by a senior writer at SB Nation. Not only that, but he is the most prolific distance runner in show history. Paul Flannery is my guest. Good to have you back, Paul. Happy New Year. How are you?
Happy New Year, Jim. I don't know if that's a big list for people for that accomplishment, but I appreciate it.
Hey, Eric Burns is on that list. You're on that list. It's actually not a bad list at all. All right, so I'll hit you on that a little bit later, right? All right, so a lot of different places to start in the NBA today, but let me start with Boston. The Celtics trail the Raptors 36-30 at the end of the first quarter. Then they follow that up with a 34-17 second quarter. Paul, given everything that's been swirling around the Celtics, how significant was the quarter and what they did the rest of the way?
I thought it was huge. I thought it was absolutely huge. And as I was watching it, I think I even tweeted, this is the best quarter of basketball they played all season. I'm not saying they were teetering on the brink, but you could see the outline of the brink from there. You know, if they had another bad night, I'm not sure how this would have gone, but they really pulled it together. And what made it so good, Jim, was that they got contributions from everybody they need to get contributions from. From Kyrie Irving, who was magnificent, all the way down to Jaylen Brown, Terry Rozier, and Hayward off the bench. It was the perfect example of what the Celtics want to be in a big game against, frankly, a team they're going to have to compete with in the playoffs this spring. So, yeah, it was huge.
All right, so let's finish that thought. I mean, hard to say that a mid-January game would be make or break, especially when you've got Brad Stevens as your coach and there's so much talent on that roster. But when you look at it, I mean, how big was that win last night for this group?
They needed it, and they needed to just take a big, deep breath, right? Because they're not as bad as they played. They know that. But, you know, things have been escalating around this team. You know, a couple of losses and they start looking inward and start, you know, Kyrie pointed some fingers over the weekend and it rubbed some guys the wrong way. So I don't think any of it, the thing about this team, Jim, is nobody has an agenda necessarily. They want to do the right thing. They just haven't been doing it consistently.
Paul Flannery joining us on the program. All right, I'm glad you brought Kyrie up. In saying that he regretted that what he said to LeBron. He called him over the weekend and said he apologized for, quote, being that young player that wanted everything at his fingertips. First of all, what do you make of that?
I thought it was interesting on a couple of levels. I mean, it's Kyrie playing three-dimensional chess. On the one hand, he's saying that he's acknowledging that he was a young knucklehead. At the same time, he's acknowledging that he's dealing with some young knuckleheads, right? But I think the part that people are missing here is that my take on it was that Kyrie was essentially, he noted he was apologizing for, he shouldn't have been calling guys out. He said, Jaylen Brown was right. I shouldn't have done that. And I think what he was saying was, like, this doesn't work on these young guys. I know it didn't work on me, and so I have to figure out a new way of dealing with it. You know, made for some good Kyrie content. I don't know. People are taking it 15 different ways, which is classic Kyrie.
It's interesting. Was he on any level right to call out those young knuckleheads? Was he right in saying what he was saying?
Let me quantify knuckleheads, too, because they are good guys. They're not knuckleheads. They're just young, and they're feeling themselves. They're trying to figure out their place in the league. But, yeah, I think that those guys, in particular, we're talking about Jaylen Brown, we're talking about Terry Rozier, and we're talking about Jason Tatum. Those three guys have not played as well as they need to play this year. And there's other guys who haven't as well. But I think when they're looking internally at what's happened here, those are the three guys. And sometimes that's unfair because, you know, who asked them to carry the load? But they feel like they can, so there's this push and pull. That's the whole team dynamic at play here. Those are the three guys that people look at. They're the guys I look at for a barometer of how the Celtics are playing, where they're playing together and connected.
We're talking to Paul Flannery. So when you look at what they did last season without Gordon Hayward and Kyrie, especially in the postseason, the expectation was these guys would just take off with both those guys coming back, but that has not happened. So we're talking about it, but when you get right to it, what is your sense as to the identity and the chemistry of this team both on and off the floor and in the locker room right now?
They don't have one yet, which is weird. Marcus Morris even said that over the weekend. He's one of the truth tellers in there. He said, we don't have an identity yet, and he's right. I mean, they started off the year not being able to play offense at all, but locked in defensively. Okay, fine. That's the way it's been. Then they switched that. They've been lights out offensively, haven't played connected defense. And so I think it's a developing situation. I think what you're seeing is you're seeing Kyrie start to assert himself as a leader. If you talk to them last year, their leaders were Al Horford and Aaron Baines. And that's a different kind of mindset than what you have when you have an abject superstar taking the reins. And so there's a little bit of push and pull. Like I said, I think everybody wants to do the right thing here. I also think this team is going to breathe a huge sigh of relief after the trade deadline, whether or not Danny Ainge does anything, and he's given no indication that he will. But I think for all those guys, they can say, okay, like, we're not going anywhere for the next 3 months. Like, it's time. We got to go play now. We got a chance to do something special. So I think you'll start to see them kick into gear as this goes along. But, Jim, I talk to people who think they're absolutely getting out of the East. I haven't seen it yet. And I haven't seen it consistently. Until they win games on the road, until they win games when it's hard, like last night, but on the road as well, then I'm going to have my doubts.
Well, and to that point, Paul, you raised a really interesting question in a piece for SB Nation yesterday. Quote, are we ready for a world in which game one of the NBA Finals is held in either Milwaukee or Toronto? So let me turn that around on you. Are you ready for that?
Not really.
What would that look like and feel like?
I think we should be. I think we should be because if I look at the East, I mean, they are clearly the two best teams. And I have questions. I have questions about Milwaukee and whether or not the style of defense they play will be successful in the playoffs. That has always been the question with Mike Budenholzer's teams. And then with Toronto, look, I know they got different guys, but they're carrying around tons of negative baggage. And they're very dependent on Kyle Lowry. So I definitely have questions about those two teams, but I haven't seen Philly ready to take that jump, and I haven't seen Boston. We just talked about them. And I love Indiana. I think they're great, but they're not that good, in my opinion. I think they're good enough to beat somebody and maybe steal a series that people don't expect them to, but I don't think they're good enough to take it all the way. You're really looking at Milwaukee or Toronto, and if this, you know, unless the Warriors decide to go on a run and win 20 in a row, the team that one of those two teams is going to have the best record in the league.
Paul Flannery joins us. Now, what about the Raptors? If they make the NBA Finals, what do you think that means for Kawhi Leonard and his decision-making? Could you really see him leaving Toronto in that scenario?
But I was talking to somebody about this last night, and nobody knows what he's going to do. And with Kawhi, he has just kept a complete stone face about the whole situation. He seems happy. He seems fine. But there are not a lot of people who have really any serious intel on what he's going to do. A lot of people still think he's going to go west. He's going to go to the Clippers. But I'm with you. I mean, you know, like Durant even said if OKC had beaten Golden State, no way he could have joined them. You know, things change. Things change in the heat of the playoffs. I don't know if that affects Kawhi at all. They've executed the strategy to put him in this position. It'd be weird if he kind of blinked right now. It's a pretty good situation for him in Toronto, but, you know, San Antonio was a good situation, too.
Kawhi's Kawhi. Who knows what he's going to do? Nobody knows what he'll do. Now, Paul, you mentioned Philadelphia. Jimmy Butler, of course, had less than a positive impact on team chemistry in his last two stops. Right. What do you make of how he's fitting in with Philadelphia so far?
That's an interesting way to put it. Yeah, I mean, he's imploded two teams. I think you have three guys who are in Embiid, Simmons, and Jimmy. You know, they all do things differently, and they want to do it their way, and they're trying to you know, wrestle for control a little bit here. I mean, the fit is not ideal. A lot of times when you get these mega teams that come together super fast, the fit is not ideal. We all got spoiled by, like, the 2008 Celtics. Their fit was perfect. It doesn't always work that way. My take on them is they've got talent for days, and it's the kind of talent that can win in the playoffs because Jimmy Butler is a stone-cold killer in the postseason and in the regular season, too. I mean, that's a guy I want on my side. At the same time, you know, you got to put up with him for 6 months to get that. Mm-hmm. So I think they're going to have some bumps along the way. To me, they are dangerous and a wild-card team, and if they make the right kind of moves at the deadline and add a couple of veterans on the buyout market, whatever – you know, I think they are absolutely as dangerous as anybody.
Now, Paul, I can't believe that we got to the end of the interview or near the end without my bringing up James Harden. He went for 57 and 58 in consecutive games. Chris Paul is out. Clint Capella is out. Eric Gordon missed time during this run. This guy's doing this pretty much on his own. It's not like teams are not trying to stop him. How do you explain what he's doing?
I mean, he's the most complete offensive player in the world right now. And he's impossible to guard, and he's impossible to guard in this environment, in this era, with the way they call games. He takes the rules to the absolute limit, and he's impossible to officiate. So he really makes you do all that. You know, he's amazing. He's awesome. My only question, which is the question everybody else has, is how long can he keep this up? Because we're in January, and it's not April, and it's not the spring. And then when you get to the playoffs, what's going to happen when he gets triple teamed? If Chris Paul is not able to sort of become Chris Paul again. So that's the danger. That's the concern. But right now, it's just awesome to watch. I mean, he's amazing.
All right. So I mentioned off the top, you are the most prolific distance runner in the history of this show. You did tweet a couple of weeks back, optimism is signing up for a 50K with a nagging injury that won't go away. So when is the 50K, and how is the injury these days?
50K is in April, second week of April, which I think is the second Sunday when the playoffs start. That's how I judge my calendar. Injury has gone away. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling primed. Ran in the freezing cold this morning and Yeah, knocking out about 50 to 60 miles a week.
I was just going to say, so when you're prepping for a 50K, what is a normal training week like, 50 to 60 miles?
Yeah, if anywhere from 40 to 60, depending on what I'm doing.
What is the long run?
The long run I do by hours, and so I'm up to 4 hours now.
Wow.
And I'd like to get up to five.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. What's the pace of a run like that?
Well, the pace is different because it's in the woods. And so you're dealing with, you know, you're dealing with climbing and you're dealing with power hiking and you're dealing with stopping, you know, you have to fuel and all that kind of stuff. So the pace is different than a road pace, but, you know, 12-minute miles in that kind of environment with that kind of up and down, and where I run is really gnarly on the East Coast. Yeah, that's pretty good.
You ever, and I only ask you this because it would happen to me. I've got no sense of direction at all, like none whatsoever. You ever get lost in the woods?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
What do you do?
Absolutely.
How do you navigate your way back?
You know, I got as high up as I possibly could and was able to see sort of a way out. And I had to go a little bit off trail, which I don't like doing because I don't like cutting through backcountry. But, you know, at some point I had to get back to where I needed to go because I was completely turned around, twisted around. And so I was able to get out of there. Where I run is not so remote as like the American West, where you could be out there for days without anybody finding you. Where I run is a pretty urban environment. So I can always, you know, have a general sense. I'm never more than 3 miles away from where I need to be.
Is there wildlife?
Sure. I've seen a coyote. I have yet to see a bear.
I've seen a bear. I was in Montana once, and I ran into a couple of bears. Man, that is scary. That's not something you want to see. There's nothing cool about that.
No, I ran into a moose in Colorado, but
same.
I was an experienced guy.
Yeah, they're
guide,
mean. So you don't want any part of a moose
they
either.
They are mean.
Don't mess with moose.
No.
He is the most prolific distance runner you see in show history and a senior writer at SB Nation. Paul, great job. Nice to have you back. Good luck with everything.
Hey, Jim. Thanks a lot, man.
Really well done. Paul Flannery. Always look forward to that conversation. I saw a coyote. We have a lot of coyotes where I live. I saw one at the top of my driveway the other day. Man, I should have posted that. The bobcat killed. Remember when I posted that? Instead, I went with Cody the ragdoll cat. He's performing. And that cat is a pimp.